Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us again for Podcasting Them Softly. This is our fourth Star Wars PowerCast. May the fourth be with you. It's Tim Fugli here with Frank Mangarelli. And first order of business on this one really is to talk about our dearly departed leader. She's always royalty to us, Princess Leia Carrie Fisher, who passed away right around Christmas, as I'm sure you all know, at the way too early age of 60. That was one of the toughest things about it for me, because that seemed to me like a gal who had a lot of years and a lot of fun left in her, but apparently it was not to be. But I was just saying to Frank before we started recording here that it was really affecting to me the second time that I saw Rogue One. First time Carrie was still with us, the second time she wasn't, and to have that CG, almost ghostly apparition of her uttering the word hope there at the end really was kind of a gut punch to me. Because I think that for a lot of us Star Wars nerds, she has always represented many things, including hope. And I just wanted to say, condolences to her friends and family. A lot of us fans feel a certain kinship approaching, family. And I'm sure that she probably had conflicted moments with her celebrity in the Star Wars universe, but I hope that, for the most part, the millions of family members she had around the planet gave her a real sense of belonging and love, because she was and is loved, and we miss her terribly.
The day Carrie Fisher died was an incredibly shitty day.
Mm-hmm.
It was awful when the news broke that she had some catastrophic heart attack on a airplane, and that she was unresponsive for like 15 minutes, and it wasn't good news at all, and all of us were just really upset and torn. And then on Christmas her mom announced that she was stable, her condition had stabilized and everything, and we're all like, yeah, Princess Leia is okay. And then the day after she died, and then the day after that her mom died, Debbie Reynolds died. And it was awful, and it was awful in a degree of reasons, because, one, we're huge Star Wars fans. Princess Leia is a symbol of so many different things, man. I mean, Jesus Christ. When I saw Return of the Jedi on VHS when I was a little kid, that's when I knew I was attracted to women. I mean, that's a big part of it. She's the antithesis of a strong female character, of a hero. And it was sad for many reasons, because one of the original three cast died. And then this does sound crass to some people or unsympathetic to some people, but for us diehard Star Wars fans, this is going to change the new saga films.
Absolutely. How can it not?
I mean, you and I had talked about this a bunch, and we talked about it in a group that we're in, that we imagined the trajectory of the next couple stories, or of the next couple films, was going to finish the Skywalker story, and there was going to be a redemption. Somehow there would be a redemption of Kylo Ren and Leia. I mean, now this just kind of throws everything up in the air, and a huge question was, does Lucasfilm, Disney, Industrial Light and Magic CGI reconstruct Carrie Fisher for episode 9 like they did with Peter Cushing for Grand Moff Tarkin in Rogue One, and how they made a young Carrie Fisher at the end of Rogue One?
Mm-hmm. And to be fair, they came out because everybody was talking about this in the immediate aftermath of Fisher's passing. And Lucasfilm did come out and said they had no plans on doing that. However, as I keep saying to people who say, well, that door's shut, I don't think it's shut at all.
No.
J.J. Abrams said he was too busy finishing Star Trek Into Darkness to think about doing Episode 7, and look how that worked out. So in the immediate, kind of emotional flush of this loss, a lot of people were talking about a lot of things, and I think Lucasfilm rushed to get a word out, because I think it would have sounded crass if they came out and said, all options are on the table, we don't know what we're going to do. They did the classy thing in the short term and said, we have no plans on doing that. I don't know that isn't necessarily going to change, though. And one of the ways that we'd talked about that I'd kind of hypothesized that might split the difference between having a full-on CGI like Grand Moff Tarkin or Leia in Rogue One would be to have figure out some kind of a pivotal scene that would happen through a hologram message with her. Because obviously the hologram message is a big piece of the Star Wars lore, so it's very familiar. And Leia, you know, going back to Episode 4, what's the original hologram message? Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Yeah.
You know, that's the original. So they might figure out a way to you know, get some symmetry in there to have her final appearance in the franchise be something like that. I have to throw this out here because I just had this conversation with my daughter over lunch. We were talking about this very subject. And her theory that she thinks, that it's an idea anyway, is that they could have her be essentially blown up by something that the First Order has done, and that sets Kylo Ren back on the road to redemption. That's where he has a break with the First Order. If she is, you know, basically off camera, if they do something terrible because they're the First Order, and she ends up losing her life due to that. And I thought that was kind of an interesting idea. I'm still of the opinion that I think it's going to be really hard to pull a U-turn on Kylo Ren after he kills his own father. But that's not to say they can't do it. But anyway, those are a couple of ideas that we'd kind of float out there. I think with the hologram piece, you can obviously totally CGI that, but from just a pure visual and experiential standpoint for the viewer, that it gives you enough of a remove that the CGI is not a problem. And also, technically, it's not fully doing her in CGI standing in frame with other characters talking, which I think a lot of people are worried about, just won't feel right.
That's a really good point. I also thought maybe a Force ghost, too. Granted, she wasn't trained as a Jedi at all, so I think that would be hard to pull off. But I think the hologram message to Kylo Ren, with her reiterating some sort of hope message, to turn him back to the light side, like, you need to help us, you're our only hope against Snoke and the First Order, of course put in a more eloquent way, I think would probably, I don't know, man, I mean, because, Jesus Christ, Episode 8, The Last Jedi, which we'll get to, I imagine that movie's going to open with probably where Episode 7 left off, but there's going to be a big funeral scene for Han. I mean,
you would hope so.
There would have to. And that's where Lando's going to come back in, hopefully, and all that stuff. So I don't know how they're going to deal with this, but I imagine that she's going to be killed off in the crawl of Episode 9.
Wow. Yeah. You may be right. You may be right.
They're going to deal with it.
Disappointing, but...
I mean, they have to address it somehow. I mean, or they go the full-out CGI Carrie Fisher, and in 5 years or 2 years and they go into production... on Episode 9, you know, the technology would have gotten that much better. You know, I still think that Peter Cushing as Tarkin is near flawless. I think it's better than the young Carrie Fisher at the end of the film, but I don't think that's as distracting as some people make it out to be. I mean, basically, when I saw Rogue One with my girlfriend, and she had no idea that Peter Cushing was a CGI character.
That's incredible.
I think there's a lot of people who are unfamiliar or unfamiliar enough with Star Wars don't know that that's a CGI character because they just think it's an actor. They got some old English dude to play this guy. You know what I mean?
You know, younger generation, it's funny because you and I come from a place of where we've seen every bit of celluloid that Lucas and now others have shot in the franchise a million times over. So for us to think of not knowing who Grand Moff Tarkin is sacrilege, but the fact of the matter is there are millions more people who have seen all these movies but who aren't as obsessed with them. So, yeah, they don't know. They wouldn't necessarily latch onto that character and figure that much out. So, yeah, that does make sense. See, for me, on that particular split, Leia worked a little better for me. Number one, because there's a great emotional weight to her scene.
Right.
Tarkin's role in Rogue One is important because you have to see how Krennic loses control of the Death Star and how Tarkin comes to run the Death Star. And so that, you know, it's well done. I get why they did it. But for me, his eyes, it comes down to the eyes. And, you know, when Zemeckis first really started messing around with a lot of motion capture stuff, you know, like Polar Express and things like that, they talked about the dead eyes, how everything else looked and felt pretty good, but the eyes seemed a little dead. To me, Tarkin's eyes were a little dead. And Leia's, alternately, I felt, were actually quite warm. I thought her eyes felt a little more natural. But, again, that's just me. I know you really liked what they did with Tarkin. Like you said, your girlfriend couldn't even tell the difference. So, obviously, they're doing something right.
Well, plus, I have a huge boner for Tarkin.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
I mean,
who doesn't?
I mean, let's be honest.
His legs, that suit. Jesus, man.
The way he rolls his tongue when he says an R. You know, I don't know. And even... It's hard to say this, but I trust Disney, Lucasfilms, Rian Johnson, Colin Trevorrow, to do what's right for Episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's a combination of everything we've talked about, they're going to find a way to make it work. I think this changes a lot, man. I mean, I really do. I think this changes a lot. I don't know if Luke's going to die now. Because we've talked about this so much about, like, you know, we originally thought Luke was going to die at the end of Episode 7. It's like, no, Han dies in Episode 7. Luke doesn't show up till the final frame of the movie. You know, is Luke going to die in Episode 8? Well, it's called The Last Jedi. But we can't lose all three. I honestly feel that. And I think that they are going to be very aware and very cautious of what they're going to do with the rest of the films. Because I honestly feel that if we lose Han Solo, Princess Leia, and Luke Skywalker, it's like, Jesus, really?
Hope is now officially dead.
No, yeah. I mean, honestly. fuck. I mean, granted, Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia's death in the Star Wars universe is forced.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something organic, unless it was something that was originally planned, which I can't imagine it would be, but...
It would be pretty surprising if she was the one who was going to pass in Episode 8 and then leave Luke for the last one. It doesn't sound, you know, from the comments that have come out about them basically knowing they have to retool Episode 9, that kind of tells you what you need to know, that Leia was going to be there for Episode 9, unless they're really blowing smoke. I think one of the key things will probably be, to your point, if they're going to change what happens to Luke in Episode 8, if we got to keep our eyes open to see if they do any reshoots, because I haven't heard of any reshoots going on whatsoever. I mean, it's all Ben Johnson in the editorial suite. That's, you know, he'll throw out a few photos from there every now and again, and those date back a while. I mean, I think principal photography wrapped on this bad boy months ago, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it's all just effects now. I think it's
mm-hmm.
it's just
yeah.
it's all computer work now, and it's just going to be very emotional watching Episode 8 because we already
yeah.
know it's going to be emotional anyway, because it's going to be the Luke story or the Luke show. Yeah. I would imagine training.
Oh yeah.
Rey.
No, I think so.
But,
mm-hmm.
but every time Princess Leia is going to be on screen, it's like, fuck.
Yeah.
It's like, we know this story comes to a close with this film essentially. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, but
you know, one, kind of cool thing, and I don't know how much they're actually going to do with it, and I hope they figure out a way to really do something with it. You know, her daughter was there in Episode 7. you know, her daughter was with the Rebel Alliance. She's got a desk job, but she's got the original buns,
right.
And she's blonde, and she's sitting there at one of, you know, and I think she's got like one line of dialogue, and she has said she has a larger role in Episode 8.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that doesn't wipe away what we've lost, obviously, but I think there would be some measure of comfort in seeing Carrie Fisher's daughter grow into a role as a regular in our new Star Wars universe. I think that'd be pretty badass. We'll see what they do about that. It's going to be real curious to see. I imagine they're going to keep Johnson on as far as the whatever rewriting goes they do for Episode 9. I don't know if they will try and pull in any outside hands, you know, kind of like how they teamed up Kasdan with Abrams for Episode 7. I know Kasdan's done after the Han Solo movie. But I just wonder if you'll see more of a brain trust brought in. Like you were saying earlier, you trust Lucasfilm, you trust Marvel, you trust Disney. They have a great brain trust there, and they really seem to know what the fuck they're doing, you know, so far. And I know there are dissenters out there, but I think you and I are with the massive majority of fans and just general public who think they've done a great job of bringing these characters back and adding new characters and doing cool new stuff with the universe. So I do have faith, but it's, you know, there's going to be a heaviness there, no matter what they do. And it's going to be for the scenes that Carrie's in and for the scenes in Episode 9 that she should have been in and can't be.
No, I mean, you nailed it there. I think, and I've been saying this forever, but right now with Carrie Fisher not going to be in Episode 9 or whatever they do with Princess Leia and the absence of Princess Leia, I think that these Star Wars saga films need Lando more than ever right now.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Because Lando isn't the original three, but if you're not part of the original three, the closest you're gonna get is Lando.
Right.
You know what I mean? And Chewie. I think
you need to get Lando and Chewie back on board the Millennium Falcon is what you need to do. No offense to Rey, but let's say Rey's going to be busy becoming a Jedi this movie. So, yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah, no, I think it's of dire need to support the next two saga films with as many seminal characters that were that close and attached to Leia to help lessen the burden of mm-hmm. the loss of her. I mean, I honestly feel that.
Basically what you're saying is they need to bring Lor San Tekka back. We need more Lor San Tekka.
Speaking of Lor San Tekka, Baze and Chirrut, the Guardians of the Will, are getting their own novel, and Lor mm-hmm. San Tekka better be in that novel. There better be some sort of Lor San Tekka connection there.
Mm-hmm. I will put in a letter to the editor for you.
I appreciate that.
Speaking of books, you know, I was going to say we never did get to talk about this, I think, on the other podcast, but if you are looking for more time to spend with Princess Leia / General Organa, this year saw the release of a book called Bloodline, which is part of the new Star Wars literary canon. You know, I know a lot of old fans aren't real happy about them getting rid of a lot of the old canon, but there is a new one, and it is very much Princess Leia centric. It's a good adventure. It's got a few good new characters, but it's primarily about her, and it helps cover, you know, in some ways I feel like I should reread it looking at politics in this country right now, because there is a fair amount of it that kind of parallels some of the things we're seeing now, where just kind of a complacency with the new republic that they have established after, you know, Vader and Palpatine bite it, of how it fell back apart and how the First Order came about. So if you're interested in, again, spending some more time with Princess Leia, but also getting some backstory of what was going on in between Episode 6 and 7, then I'd recommend it. I think it's a good read.
I love Bloodline. I'm reading Catalyst now. I'm going to be on a flight, so I'm going to bring that with me, and I'll probably finish that while I am traveling. And,
When is Catalyst set? I don't know anything about Catalyst.
Catalyst is the prequel that's set on – that's You're gonna go out and buy it after I tell you this. But
probably
Catalyst is the prequel to Rogue One that focuses on Galen and Krennic's relationship.
Ah, okay, very cool. Yes, I would like to spend some more time with those characters.
So yeah, it's very cool. I never got into the old canon. I read Shadows of the Empire, but that was about it. I never read the Thrawn trilogy. I'm very familiar with Thrawn. I know he's on Rebels, which I haven't caught up to that part yet, because I don't have Disney XD. But yeah, I'm very excited for the new line of books. I've read Bloodline, Tarkin. I bought the Ahsoka book, and then I have Dark Disciples, which is the Asajj Ventress book that takes place after Clone Wars. Or after she's out of the show Clone Wars. I think they're very good, and they're a lot of fun, and it is a lot of fun spending time with characters that became your own fan favorite. You know what I mean? Like, Tarkin got his own book. I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you just mentioned a couple fan favorites from the Clone Wars, too.
Oh, yeah.
I think most character would, you know, Ahsoka and Ventress, I think fans of that would probably want to spend more time with them, too.
Certainly. I'm very much, and I'm gonna buy the shit out of the Chirrut and Baze book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll definitely read that. Those two, they, like I said before, not to digress, we probably talked about this on the last podcast, but there was a real Han and Chewie feel to them for me
for
some
sure.
reason, even though very different characters, and obviously being a Daredevil geek, having a blind kind of pre-Jedi running around out there was just total geek wood to me. I loved watching him go to town. But anyway, back to Leia. So do you think there's any chance at all they would reverse course and really try and do a CGI scene to wrap it up with her? Do you really think that they're going to write her out?
Both. I think they're going to try very hard to see how close they can get to a CGI Leia.
Mm-hmm.
But if they can't pull it off, they're not going to try and force it. They will come up with another way, whether it's a write-out, it's a scroll write-out with a hologram, or her getting destroyed on a planet or a ship by the First Order. I mean, it's going to be something like that. but I honestly think they want to try and CGI recreate her like they did for Tarkin. Not because, see, and this is where it gets into the whole gray area. I know a lot of people had huge problems with Tarkin, Peter Cushing being CGI reconstructed as like some sort of moral principle that got desecrated. You know, I don't think it was that at all. I don't think it was some sort of breach of trust. I don't think it was anything. You could have easily cast Ben Mendelsohn or you know, Mads Mikkelsen or an actor of that caliber as Tarkin in Rogue One, but they chose to CGI recreate Peter Cushing, which was the ultimate fan service, man. And they're not trying to cash in on anything. I mean, how profitable is it to release a Peter Cushing Rogue One action figure or pop? I mean, you know what I mean? There's going to be a lot of people that are going to buy it because of the character, but that was just a fan service. And I think if they choose the route of CGI reconstructing Carrie Fisher for Episode 9, they are only doing that because it is giving, you know, it's fan service. That is the only reason they would be doing that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just trying to give her a proper send-off. It's so when a life is literally interrupted like that.
Yeah, that too.
Again, it's such an early age. I think everybody feels like we want to see her a little more. And obviously we get that in Episode 8. But, yeah, we'll see. And I was going to say, too, there is – follow me here. There's a certain level of appropriateness to this based on just the sheer, number one, special effects innovations that Industrial Light and Magic is known for, starting with the original Star Wars movies. But then with the prequels, one of the many areas you can give them credit for is the amount to which Lucas expanded the digital universe on screen, of what you see. You know, I know there were movies prior to those where green screens were being used extensively, but I mean, I think by the end of Revenge of the Sith, when literally everything was being done digitally. That was pretty groundbreaking stuff. So Star Wars stepping out on a special effects limb to try something is nothing new.
Right.
And you can say, well, they just did it in Rogue One, and some people didn't like it. Yeah, well, fucking A. Too bad, because they're most likely going to continue to press the boundaries of what they can do. And I think part of the blowback against Leia and Tarkin in that, too, is kind of a growing fear of digital characters, you know, maybe someday overtaking real actors. And, you know, that real actors would not be there. I don't personally fear that much. Because even though the technology is certainly gets better every year as far as what people can use their computer to put on a screen, I don't think movies are going to be as relatable to people. The people who have to go watch them and pay money to see them and own copies for home viewing, you still need the very human element of pretty much all films in order to relate to it. Otherwise, you know, people just aren't going to be that interested. So I'm not as worried about that as some people are. I understand the instinct, the thought that, oh, this technology is just going to rip the humanity and the necessity for humans out of the experience. But I don't think that's going to happen. And I think if ever there was an opportunity for them to go next level and give us something better than what we got in Rogue One, you know, I would hope that all the engineers over there at ILM, if they are actually thinking they might do this, are really busting their hump to figure out how they can do it better than it's ever been seen before.
I agree 100%. Yeah, I'm not too worried about actors being replaced by CGI models. I don't think that is really within the near future. Sure, there'll probably be some subgenre of films that start doing that, or low-budget films will try and start doing that with some stuff, but no, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I mean, we already have that in animated films, and that's already happened in some films. What was that Linkletter film, Scanner Darkly, to a certain degree? Mm-hmm. And it's just very gimmicky. It's cool. There's some Daniel Craig movie called The Resistance or something. I think they did something like that, too. It's an English movie. But yeah, no, I don't foresee that happening. And I think you're right when you say that not only would it be a fan service, but it would be giving Carrie Fisher a proper send off in the saga film. And I think that's something that she would want, because I mean, that woman embraced Star Wars. I mean, she really did. I'm sure she went through a huge, and she did go through a period of resentment, but she truly did embrace Star Wars and her admiration from millions and millions of people all over the world.
It felt that way to me. I mean, it felt like a real homecoming for Episode 7 to have her come back, play General Organa, and I felt like she was in a really good place with her legacy with Star Wars when she passed, just based on the various interviews and comments I'd read. And, you know, obviously there was that stupid Twitter response to her appearance. I thought she looked just gorgeous in Episode 7, but obviously some people, the internet had to go be the internet for a while, and she told a bunch of those people to go fuck themselves, because she's Carrie Fisher and she's badass, and that's what she does to people
right.
who talk shit about her.
Right.
She tells them to go fuck off. But aside from that, it felt to me like she was really back in a good place with the fans in the Star Wars universe. So that makes my heart happy. I have a copy of The Princess Diarist. I did pick that up over Christmas. I haven't cracked it open yet, but I'll be reading it soon, and I'm looking forward to it. On your recommendation, I taped and watched Wishful Drinking, which I had not seen before, which I highly recommend anybody out there hasn't seen her do her kind of stand-up spoken word stuff. She's very funny. She's a Hollywood insider like nobody's business, so she really knows her stuff, and very, very funny, informative, insightful stuff.
Without a doubt, man. Yeah. And it's a shame she was going to do another stand-up comparable to Wishful Drinking. It was called Something Strikes Back, a riff off of Empire Strikes Back. She was about to do a tour of that, and then she passed. But, I mean, she's timeless, man. She always will be.
She is, yeah. And, just to circle back to her original impact, you know, you were talking about how I think she was the first crush for probably going on two generations of men now. But also, on the flip side of that coin, I always feel like she and Lucas, as he envisioned the character, passed along a real blessing to me and millions of others who were just going to see the movies for the first time when that came out in 77, that the first time I saw a damsel in distress, she was not a damsel. Shit was going wrong, but she was not in distress about it. She was a fighter. She was tough. She took the reins in her own rescue as much as anyone else did. And those kind of subversions that we were provided by her strong performance and really some lightning in a bottle writing from Lucas really set the stage for how I appreciate women in film and always have. Going forward, to find them, you know, like you do with Leia, beautiful, sexy, all those things, but also strong, capable, every bit the equal of not only her enemies, but her allies. And I just think that she really set the tone for me in the way I look at movies and look at women in movies in a really good way. And so I thank you for that, Carrie, wherever you are. Actually, I know where you are. You are strangled by your own bra and drowning in moonlight somewhere. Her words, not mine. Just to be fair, if somebody listening to this says, "What the fuck is he talking about?" That was her official obituary that she requested long, long ago. Do you know the anecdote behind that? Should we tell that about where the strangled by your bra goes?
Do it.
Yeah, because apparently Lucas told her when they were shooting episode 4 that she couldn't wear a bra. And I think she was young enough that at the time she didn't really question it, but later asked him, and he said, "Well, you can't wear a bra in space." And she said, "Okay, why?" And he said, "Well, because when you start off, you know, you put your bra on and you're not in space, then everything's proportionate. But then when you get into space..." What did he say? Your body swells or something? He basically said your body swells and the bra wouldn't fit anymore and it would strangle you. Which sounds like maybe George just didn't want her wearing a bra. I don't know how much science was necessarily behind this. But in any case, she took that to heart. And of course, as her wonderful mind did, she turned it into something funny. So we will miss that wit and wisdom.
Definitely.
Yeah. So real quick, Frank, any particular thoughts or any good rumors you've heard about The Last Jedi?
I am trying not to read anything on anything because I know the last time I did that, we both thought Max von Sydow was going to be Boba Fett. So I have not looked at anything. I didn't realize it when I initially read it. Somebody brought it up that The Last Jedi can be both singular and plural.
Right.
I think it's going to be a dark chapter. It's going to be like Empire Strikes Back. Bad shit's going to happen. Luke's going to tell Rey that he's her father at the end of the movie. And I don't know. I think that Rey is the last Jedi.
Think so? She will be the last Jedi standing. I mean, it makes sense. I know that whole plural thing, and I think I'm the one. A friend of mine brought that up right when the title came out, so I know I was talking about that a little bit. If it was, you know, 50 Jedi sitting around just waiting to hop into action, that would be pretty lame. So I think we're definitely down to, you know, one or two here. And that, yes, you're probably going to have the last Jedi left standing there at the end. I want to tell you, this sounds like total fanboy, fan service bullshit. But at the same time, I like it as a rumor, so I'm going to share it. I don't know where anyone would have this, you know, it's like it would have been leaked or something, but people are talking about basically that finally showing Vader's palace in Rogue One is a teaser to a return to Vader's palace in Episode 8, wherein we will see Luke take on Kylo Ren and or the Knights of Ren. So I read that somewhere, and it sounds marvelous, but again, it also just sounds like pure fanboy service. So I still do believe, I think they would be missing out on a golden opportunity if they did not show us the Knights of Ren, now that they have established that is a thing. If they just give us a little bit, I'm down with that, because Star Wars, you know, kind of like with Boba Fett, you always wanted to see more of him. but he was in there just enough to really kind of stick in the back of your brain. And I think the Knights of Ren have kind of done that for me, just barely hinted at that rainy slaughter scene in the flashback
right.
in episode 7, looking just super badass, and just having a collection of these Black Knights. That seems like a very good addition to the Star Wars canon.
Well,
so.
I imagine Snoke's on Mustafar.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, they call him home at the end, but they don't say where the home base
is. I imagine Snoke's on Mustafar because that's you know, the Sith planet essentially.
Yeah.
And Snoke's probably in Vader's castle because he's got his grandson. You know, and they have the melted helmet. I mean,
it would make sense that would be the special. You know, it's like L. Ron Hubbard's childhood home to the Scientologists or something, right? It's like, this is the special hallow place.
No.
Yeah.
Totally.
But that would make sense. And, you know, again, that it would help tie in with it would help tie in to Rogue One to bring that set back. It obviously ties into the original lore because they always talked about showing Darth Vader's palace. They just never did it. And then it would also tie into Revenge of the Sith. You know, it would be another way to kind of keep the flow going with all of the films playing together and not just ignoring, you know, as we talked about on the Rogue One podcast, it was great to see Jimmy Smits in there. It was nice to see, the name's escaping me now, one who shot scenes for Episode 3 but didn't really
Mon
end
Mothma,
up in it. Mon Mothma. Yeah, absolutely. To use the same actress. So I wouldn't be surprised if they brought that back in because it does kind of keep things feeling more in canon.
Right.
But from the few comments that we've read from cast and crew, and I remember I think Adam Driver was talking about basically saying he felt that Johnson was bringing some subtlety to the franchise. I don't know if that was his exact word, but that's how it came across to me, is that it sounded like Johnson was maybe bringing some subtlety to certain moments that the Driver felt he hadn't seen in the whole franchise before. So I'm a big Rian Johnson fan. I've seen what he can do. I've seen all his movies, and I think he's a great writer and director. So I couldn't be more pleased that he's involved, not only making this one all himself, but that he's involved with that screenplay for the ninth one too. That
right.
that bodes well to me. I think Trevorrow did a fine job with the movies he's made so far. He hasn't done anything to blow me away one way or the other, but he could well be one of those guys. And the franchise has certainly seen him before, where as long as they're handed a good script, they'll execute it. And if that's, you know, if that's the extent of what he needs to do, and he's got a great script from Johnson, even with the changes we've been discussing that are inevitable, then I'm okay with him. But also, if Lucasfilm decides to just scrap everything they have and go hire Joss Whedon to write and direct it, I think you and I would both be just great with that too, right?
I mean, I'll tell you what, The Force Awakens turned me into a J.J. Abrams believer. I doubt that anything would change if Joss Whedon came on for Episode 9. I would feel more comfortable with Joss Whedon doing Episode 9, be honest with you. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll have to come back with Episode 5 of our Star Wars PowerCast, and we are unsure what we'll talk about. Maybe if you get Catalyst and pound it out, we can talk about Catalyst.
I think we could probably do that. I think we're probably going to have a lot more to talk about, hopefully. Now, I don't know if they haven't made any official announcement at all, but I hold out hope in my little heart that Super Bowl Sunday here is going to give us our first glimpse.
It's either going to be Super Bowl Sunday or it's going to be Celebration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Celebration is coming up too. That would probably, yeah, they'll probably make us wait. But, you know, that first trailer that we got with the, you know, you get to see Kylo Ren stomping through the forest. You don't realize it at the time, but you're listening to Snoke narrate, and then you get a little flash of the Falcon, you know, something, just give me that much, not
right.
even that much, just give me the Falcon, or just
right.
give me a lightsaber, just something.
Right, they'll certainly do a teaser, an actual teaser, before they do a trailer, like they did
yeah,
for Celebration, or they probably will do for Celebration. I think that was like the same amount of time between, maybe a little longer, when we got that first teaser, and then we got that the Chewie We're Home trailer. at San Diego Comic-Con. So I imagine it'll be something comparable to that, but we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as Rogue One taught us, it could well be a commercial filled with things that won't end up in the movie anyway. So it's not like they're showing their hand, right?
That's true.
Yeah, those tricky guys over there. All right, well, I think that's a wrap on Episode 4, and we will be back soon with Episode 5, The Podcasting Them Softly Crew Strikes Back, or something along those lines. We'll massage it a little bit. Frank here is about to head out to the Santa Barbara Film Festival and party with the rich and famous and interview all of them. So hope you guys listening, tune in. He's going to have some great stuff like he had last year coming back here in a few weeks. So looking forward to that, man. Have a great trip.
Yeah, when everybody's listening to this, I will actually be there. And the day you are listening to this or the day it comes out, Denzel Washington is going to be getting the Malton Masters Lifetime Achievement Award. So I will be – actually, that'll be the day before this gets published. So anyway, the day this gets published is going to be Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone for La La Land, and yes, I do have red carpet access, and yes, I did get a stack of business cards made for Podcasting Them Softly, so my big plan is going to be when Denzel Washington comes on the red carpet, I'm going to fall down, and I'm going to throw him up in the air, and hopefully he's going to help me get up, and then I'm going to shove as many of them into his pockets as I can, and then when you bail me out, I'm going to go back the next day, and however many business cards I have left, I'm just going to throw them at Ryan Gosling.
Perfect.
So that's
perfect.
Kind of my plan.
Yeah, the video of both of these incidents, because there will be cameras aplenty there, that will go viral.
Yeah.
And,
you want to talk about free
advertising? We're off to the races. Uh-huh. Throw a bunch of cards at Denzel Washington. Yeah, free all the free advertising you want. Also, perhaps, all of the free security escorting from the premises you might want. So,
yeah,
you know.
I think the ads on our website, I think the hits on our website, the ad money would probably put a chunk in whatever legal fee I'd be facing. So,
there you go. There you go. It'll all balance out in the end.
Yeah,
you got to do
fine.
It. You got to do it.
It'll be fine.
Sure.
I'll have that story. I'll be that guy at a bar in 40 years telling everybody the story about Denzel Washington punching me in the face. So
they won't believe me, and you'll pull up the YouTube video because it'll be forever.
But anyway, yeah, I'm going to be in Santa Barbara. It's going to be a good time. Looking forward to it. So hopefully I'll get some good stuff like I did last year.
Awesome. I look forward to hearing and seeing all of it. And from all of us to all of you out there, the Force is with you. You are one with the Force. And may the Force be with you. This is getting more and more complicated with each movie.
It is. And Tim did buy me the I Am One with the Force t-shirt for my Christmas. And
yep. You had to have it.
That's to Santa Barbara. I'm going to wear it with
awesome.
The blazer. I know. I'm going to look awesome.
I think so. I think so. Well, say hi to Denzel for us.
I will. All right. Awesome.
All right. Signing off.